Okay, well, was it good or bad? Should I go or not? Yes, it was good, and go. Like, thank you for watching this far into the video. Welcome to another episode of Christian Combatives. I am your host and servant in Jesus Christ, Paladin Actual. It's finally here. I'm doing the review of Higher Things that people have been asking for. Now, for those of you who are not familiar, for those of you who watch the channel, thank you to all 24 subscribers. For those of you who are not familiar, a couple of years back, I went to the National Youth Gathering, or whatever they're calling it now. And this is my first time ever going to a National Youth Gathering. This was also my first time ever going to a Higher Things. So I don't have a vested interest in one of those or the other being like, you know, I totally grew up going to this one conference and this other conference. Arr. So I went to the National Youth Gathering and I put together, well, first I started whining about it on Facebook. Then I put together a series of videos talking about kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly. The things that I enjoyed there, the things that were not so great there, and the things that were like, whoa, we should not have that at a Lutheran conference at all. For whatever reason, I wonder why, people seem to only remember the negative stuff. Like, there was tons of good stuff. I was like, look, I love these sessions. The speakers had some wonderful things to say. Maybe some of them I disagreed with on certain points, but for the most part, they were teaching some good, solid stuff. And then, of course, the divine service on the final day, when everybody unfortunately left early and skipped the best part. Like, that was great. That was fantastic. There was all sorts of good things. But a lot of people only remember the review for the sake of the negative things. Now, for a lot of people, National Youth Gathering is something they grew up going to. I understand. They're like, yeah, this is great. I love it. I love doing this thing. So their concern was, okay, if you're going to be so critical of National Youth Gathering, are you going to be so critical of Higher Things? Well, I'm not associated with Higher Things. Like, I have no vested interest in lying about what I saw at Higher Things. So I'll give you the honest truth of what I saw. But I did agree to be critical. Now, this was my downfall because I let the internet, let's say, I let them set the terms of like what to look for. So for example, for National Youth Gathering, I was on the lookout for any sort of areas where the contemporary service type thing like bled into some bad stuff like Bethel songs, Hillsong songs, like any of these heretical organizations that put out music that Christians listen to a lot. Like, that was the kind of thing I was looking out for in National Youth Gathering. I was also, and unfortunately there was a little bit of that, I was also looking out for a lot of like positions that were really lax on the law in terms of, let's say, social issues and whatever. And I didn't find that, actually. I went to all the sessions that I thought might potentially be teaching some bad stuff on the, and really at National Youth Gathering, the sessions that I went to, they were fantastic. They taught the right things. Again, I disagree with maybe some of the strategies of approaching, you know, dealing with sin and stuff like that, but go back and watch the videos. There's a lot of positive things that I said. In the case of Higher Things, because people knew that I was going to be going to Higher Things, again, all 24 of you who watch the channel, thank you. Reaching out to me and saying, hey, look, you're going to go to Higher Things. Here's what to look out for. Here are the concerns. So first in this video, I want to talk about the three sort of main concerns that people had, maybe not quite accusations, but assumptions that they had about Higher Things and about the attendance of Higher Things. I want to talk about after that, I want to talk about some general comparisons between Higher Things, National Youth Gathering, or just Higher Things in general. And then I want to, like, this is probably going to be the most boring section for a lot of you people, all 24 of you. 23 of you, oh, what if you just unsubscribed? I better hurry before I lose all my subscribers. At the last part, I'm going to talk about kind of what I saw there, like some of the, what they call breakaway sessions or something like that, the plenaries, the sermons. Like, I recorded as I was sitting, I was taking notes of the sermon. I was like, oh, okay, that's good, that's good. Oh, that's interesting, I got to think about that later. If you're just too lazy and you're like, okay, well, was it good or bad? Should I go or not? Yes, it was good, and go. Like, thank you for watching this far into the video. I appreciate the four minutes of view time that you've given this horrible channel. Yeah, it was good. I liked it. I couldn't recommend it highly enough. Have a good day. For those of you who are sticking around, the three assumptions and accusations from the internet that were leveled against Higher Things. This is the first one. The first one was antinomianism. If you don't know what antinomianism is, that's fine. Nobody does. The word means like against the law or anti-law. Now, there are antinomians in real life. Like, I've encountered LCMS antinomians. And it's not something where it's like, let me see if there's like a crypto antinomian, like a secret antinomian type thing. Like, no, I have encountered a person, for example, who says, how can I phrase this without... Okay, they say that certain types of people should never be given the law. Certain types of Christians should never be told the law, because if they hear the law, they will just harden their heart and double down on their sin. Therefore, you must never preach the law to them. That is antinomianism, specifically saying you should not preach the law to Christians or you should not preach the law to the world. That is anti-law, antinomianism. That's what antinomianism is. Unfortunately, we have this wonderful thing that we do with the internet, especially us Lutherans, for whatever reason, we like to go on witch hunts. We like to say, is this guy like a crypto? Just put crypto in front of it if you're going to slander somebody. And then you don't have to have any rules for like whether or not they fall into any categories. Like, is this guy a crypto antinomian? I don't know. He only said to repent 3 times in his sermon. Usually you need to repent 4 times in a sermon. I don't know. Might be a crypto antinomian. So antinomianism was a charge that was given to me by... let's say his name is Jim. I'm sorry to all the people named Jim. I know some wonderful Jims. Anyways, so this guy, Jim, is like, okay, you're going to the Higher Things Conference. Keep an eye out for antinomianism. It's rampant in the LCMS. And I was like, okay, I'll do that. So, unfortunately, this is what I did in, I would say a stupid approach, but sinful is probably a better way to describe my approach to this. So I went and after a wonderful sermon, I went and talked to one of the guys who's in charge of Higher Things, Pastor Sturzenbecker. Now, I have never had communication with this guy before. I don't know that he knows who I am. I'm just some random jerk who comes up to him. And me, without the thinking part of my brain turned on, I left my prefrontal cortex back in Arizona when I traveled, just operating on amygdala at that point. I say, hey, so are you an antinomian? And this is a wonderful way to start a conversation, by the way. If you ever want to like lose some teeth, go up to a confessional Lutheran pastor and ask, don't ask them, accuse them of being an antinomian, violate the Eighth Commandment, in fact, and you know, reap the whirlwind. So I goes up to this guy and I says, the internet is concerned about antinomianism. Are you teaching antinomianism here? Well, he does what every self-respecting American would do. He cocks back some knucks and pops me square in the chops. You know, I lost a tooth or two. No, he doesn't do that. He doesn't hit me in the face. Actually, he exercises pastoral discretion and discipline, and he sees that I have a bad case of foot and mouth disease. And he asks me in return, he says, well, you just heard my sermon. What did you hear? Wow. I mean, like, that's, I'm pretty sure Jesus said something really similar when somebody was criticizing him as well. It's a pretty good tactic of saying, okay, well, let's actually discuss what was being talked about rather than empty accusations from the internet. So then he and I got in this conversation about it. One of the big takeaway points that I got, and I want to repeat this, is he invited me to, he says, well, what did you experience? And to anybody who has concerns about this, what do you think? Why don't you watch the videos and look at this information for yourself? Why don't you come to one of these Higher Things conferences and see for yourself? If this is a concern that you legitimately have, then certainly you would do the due diligence to reach out and ask specific questions. You would do the due diligence, to look at the actual content. By the way, they film their content. Higher Things has a lot of online stuff, even stuff from their conferences. Or you do the due diligence to actually go to a Higher Things conference yourself. So if you want to make accusations about something, I think I put out a video about this, like talk to the person instead of talking about the person. If you're concerned about antinomianism within Higher Things, where? Specifically, I'm talking to you, Jim. Where do you see it? Where did you see the antinomianism in Higher Things? Because let me tell you, I was there. I was in it. I was in the thick of it. I saw everything. And I didn't see any antinomianism. I didn't see any of it. Where was it? I was waiting for it to pop out from behind a rock or something like that. Here I was like, yeah, this is going to be horrible. It's going to be, no. No, I was looking for antinomianism. I didn't go in with blinders on or anything like that. I was like, okay, let me see what this Higher Things conference has to offer. And I got to tell you, Jim, didn't see any antinomianism there. I don't know where you thought you saw it. I don't know if you're on the substance or what, because I saw the sermons. Some of the sermons had implicit calls to repentance. Some of the sermons had explicit calls to repentance. All of the sermons had law and gospel. I had just reread C.F.W. Walther's Law and Gospel. So I was prepped to go. It's not there. Or if it was there, I mean, I don't know where you could find it. You're going to have to be specific. So in terms of that charge, in terms of that accusation, assumption, I'm making up words here. So what happens when I don't get coffee? I get worse when I do get coffee. It's nonsense. It's slander. It's a violation of the Eighth Commandment. And it's stupid. You don't want to be stupid, do you? Like, this is a dumb accusation to make. And again, if you want to go the route of like a secret antinomian, a crypto antinomian, a pseudo antinomian or whatever, like you could label that, you could put that label on anybody. And at that point, if you put a label on anybody, it doesn't mean anything. Labels. There's a whole lot to get into regarding higher things and talking about identity and who I am and labels. That was our theme for this year, was who I am. Oh man, there's so much good content to get into, but I'm going to get ahead of myself. All right. So that was the first assumption that I had to deal with, was this nonsense charge of antinomianism. All right. Big word. Don't worry about it. It wasn't there. It was a great conference. All right. The second assumption slash concern that some people had, is that it was going to be too much church. Looking at the schedule, there's like 4 church services a day. There's additional stuff that you could do as well. There was going to be too much church and the children, the youth will hate it. This was nonsense. This was so wrong. Thanks be to God for that. The children, the youth, they went to all of these different services and stuff like that. But the more they went to these services, the more they seemed to like it. Interesting that the more you do something, the more you become familiar with it, the more you see other people enjoying it, the more you see other people excited about it, the more you get excited about it yourself. Like, it's almost like this is like a psychological principle of like training people and raising them up in the right way. I don't know. What am I talking about? I got a bachelor's in psychology. You know, what do I know? Right. But no, but yeah, like too much church and the children will hate it. No, there was one of my guys was talking to me like during the service. He was like, look here, this in the bulletin, this little triangle means that we're going to stand up. I'm like, mm-hmm. And he says, well, every time they have the triangle, at some point in this verse, in this hymn, it's going to talk about Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I'm like, mm-hmm. And it was noticing all of these things that he hadn't picked up before, but we were repeating, it was frequent enough that we were doing this church thing that he was seeing these patterns that I've been trained to look at. I'm like, yeah, that's called the Trinitarian invocation. If you look at the hymn, it's if there's a Trinitarian invocation in the hymn, it's usually the last stanza. There's a little triangle before the last verse or whatever. It means all rise, you know, and then we're going to say Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. I may genuflect a little bit, that kind of thing. But he was able to see these patterns that I had seen because I've been trained in it, but he was able to see because he was able to do this on such a regular basis. Again, there was like, I don't know, what, 3 days or something like that, but 4 services a day or something. There was a lot of church there, and I did not hear one complaint. I had teenagers, and I didn't hear one person complain about the church services. Do you know how hard it is to make a teenager not complain about something? And it was church. Teenagers like church. And it turns out they actually like the liturgy and all this other stuff too. Which brings me into my third assumption to deal with. My third concern that somebody brought to me is that because it was high church, it was going to be too boring. Now, a lot of this is in contrast to like the National Youth Gathering thing. You got contemporary worship and all this other stuff. Rock bands and stuff like that. But the kids aren't going to be interested because we're singing hymns. You know what they started out with? They started out with Thy Strong Word. That hymn slaps. That is like the best hymn ever written. I'm sorry, throw hands if you don't like, but Thy Strong Word is great. And oh man, you should have heard the arrangement that they had. It was like this marching, like I kind of want to contact the cantor. I'm not sure if he's a cantor, the musician, the organ player who did this. I've never heard an arrangement like this for Thy Strong Word. And it was like the tramp of soldiers' feet, like type thing. It was, oh man, it was good. It was good. They started off with Thy Strong Word. They had a bunch of other ones that I really loved. But this thing where because it's high church, it's got to be boring and like devoid of emotion, or because, you know, waving your hands in the air and, you know, like swaying back and forth and stuff like that. So therefore it's not. No. No, not just I caffeinated, but the other adults and all of the youth, all 700 people in that building were enjoying these hymns. They were doing the liturgy. I didn't see one person sitting on their phone, texting the whole time with their arms folded going, oh, this is dumb. I don't want to do this. This is old people church. Not a one. Do I need to remind you? These are teenagers. Their default state is on their phone or with their arms crossed. I know because I act like that myself all the time, but God bless them. They were loving it. They were loving it almost as much as me. I loved it. You know, Thy Strong Word. I can't get enough of that hymn. Play it at my funeral. High church did not mean boring. High church did not mean devoid of emotion. High church meant, wow, we did something like this. Yeah, we did something like this at church. Our church, you can call it high church. I just call it the way things are supposed to be done. the youth in my group were like, yeah, this is just like pastor does at home. He's got his, they had alms and stoles and chasubles. And at one point they even had a, what is it called? A thurible or whatever, the incense. I haven't gotten there yet, but you know, maybe one day. They had all of these great things. They had, you know, they had the organ. They had at some point they had choir. They had all of these really cool things. And the youth weren't excluded. This wasn't just a service for old people, and then the youth had to sit and suffer through it. They were engaged in this thing. So this nonsense idea that the only way that we can possibly reach younger kids is by giving them watered down, happy, clappy, contemporary nonsense is in fact nonsense. Now, this is not to say that there's no place for, I would say, good praise music. Maybe that place is in the car, that place is singing it around, maybe it's when you're at the gym, you really rock out to praise music. But in terms of the church service, there's no reason we need to replace any of these hymns, any of these ancient hymns, and any of these ancient chantings and liturgy and all this other stuff. There's no reason we need to replace this with something newer and maybe not as well tested. There is absolutely no evidence to suggest that these kids somehow can't follow or don't enjoy the high church aspect of the Lutheran church. In fact, to the contrary, and I speak this from experience from the youth that I talk to, not just in my congregation, but also on the internet, is a lot of them get attached to this because they're like, wow, this is what my grandma used to sing. This is what my great grandparents used to do. This is what they did in the old country or whatever. Like, this is something that's been going on for a while. Did you know that you want to be a part of something bigger than themselves? Something that has lasted the test of time? Anyways, I could just keep going on about this high church thing for ages. Suffice it to say that this argument that it was going to be too boring because it was high church. It's go on YouTube. Again, this thing that Pastor Sturzenbecker told me, come and see for yourself. Seriously, go on YouTube, look up, I'm trying to think of which one is my favorite. There's a Higher Things video. I don't know what conference it is. Not Let All Mortal Flesh Be Silent. But yeah, go look up Higher Things hymn. And you'll see like an entire church full of youth and they're all singing. Some of them are selected for the choir. Some of them are over there playing instruments. Like, they're into it. Do not underestimate the faith that children can have, the enthusiasm that youth can have for the gospel and these good traditional things that we've had for a long time that are tried and tested. Don't underestimate how much they can enjoy something if you show them that you enjoy the thing as well. Anyways, great stuff. The three accusations again, the three assumptions were antinomianism, couldn't find it anywhere. Second, too much church to children will hate it. Not a thing. Third, too boring, too high church. Children aren't going to be interested. Again, not a thing. So these were the three negative assumptions that were given to me to investigate going in. Look out for these things, you know, Paladin Actual or whatever they call me. And I don't want to say that I was pleasantly surprised because, I mean, let me be honest here. I wasn't surprised. I was like, all right, this is my expectation that they will do high church and they will do high church right. And they did high church and they did high church right. And I know high church rocks, and I know that youth love high church, but hey, what do I know? You know, I'm a young pastor. Nobody listens to me about this stuff. I'm telling you, like, the youth actually like these things, but you know, funny, disagree with me and have your, you know, whatever. All right. So that's the first part of the video. Second part of the video, I wanted to talk about kind of some of the general things that I picked up from Higher Things. Now, again, because I don't have all of these accusations and stuff saying, oh, this thing was wrong for this reason, this thing was wrong for this reason, I can't go through these like I did for the National Youth Gathering review. In this review, I'm mostly going to be talking about kind of like what I saw for myself, which is, again, why it would benefit you to go and see for yourself, either go in person if you can. I just found out that they have scholarships. Fantastic. If I can, I would love to go again. My church is actually planning on going to the National Youth Gathering this upcoming year. Yes, that's right. We're going back on purpose, and we're going to enjoy it. But I would also, I mean, if I got the chance to go to the National Youth Gathering and I got a chance to go to Higher Things again, that would be fantastic. I've got some people in my congregation whose youth are just old enough that they're going to be able to appreciate these things. I would love to be able to take them. And I just found out that there are scholarships available. Dude, that's awesome. That's fantastic. Let me say this before the thought escapes what little part of my mind I have left. This did not feel like a vacation, an optional vacation trip for the kids. That's not what this felt like. This wasn't something where it was like, you know what, man, I don't know if it's really in the budget to go to higher things. You know, this one's not really in the budget to go to national, whatever. Like, this is not like, I don't even know what to compare it to. I don't even want to say VBS, because a lot of times VBS have some really good stuff in them. But this is not something where it's like, we're just taking the kids to the circus. That's not what's going on here. This is something where I think, especially in this day and age where we live on technology, where it's essential to see so many other Lutherans in person doing the same things that you are doing. I think that this is essential, just like going to Bible study is essential. If you're not going to your church's Bible study in the morning, you need to be. Just like confirmation class is essential, just like Sunday school is essential, you know, where you're actually taught real things. This is education. This is essential stuff. This is good stuff. This is not stuff that should be considered optional. This should be like a budgeted expense in your church on a regular basis. Tending to your youth. If God has blessed you with youth in your congregation, even as a layperson, if God has blessed you guys with youth in your congregation, whether it's 1 or 20 or 100, you have a responsibility as Christian adults to take care of them, to raise them up in the right faith and raise them up in the right kind of expression of that faith. So, don't look at this as like, if we have money, maybe we'll go. Like, no, budget for it. Find a way. Find a way. Check it out. And if you go to one of these things, you'll like, if you've been to a higher things recently, you don't need me to convince you. You know exactly. You're like, yeah, there's so much stuff there. All right, general higher things experiences. One of the differences that I noticed between National Youth Gathering and Higher Things, obviously off the bat, was the size. National Youth Gathering had something like tens of thousands of youth and stuff like that. Whereas Higher Things, we had 700 people here. I'm not sure the size of the people at the other location, but I know it's not going to be in the tens of thousands. Now, it fulfilled kind of different purposes. These aren't competing organizations. It's not do this or the other one. Like I said, we're doing both of them. Like, yeah, if we can afford it, this is the problem. So National Youth Gathering, one of the cool experiences for that one was for the youth to be able to look around and be like, wow, look at how many Lutherans there are just at this conference, you know, not even like Lutherans in the world, not even Lutherans in the United States, but just as a fraction of them, tens of thousands. Wow, we're not so alone after all. Now, National Youth Gathering had the additional benefit of you didn't have the, you know, the tens of thousands or whatever, but you had the 700. Because you had a smaller group, a lot of my youth were able to see the same people like, hey, look, I remember you from, you know, you're from that church in Nebraska or whatever, and see the same people on a regular basis. I have some very friendly youth in my congregation, and one of them made like, I think it was 6 new friends, within 3 days. I wish I could do that. Nobody wants to be my friend. But 6 friends, I mean, but this was great because he could keep seeing them at the events again. He'd be like, oh, look, they're sitting over there and the, you know, whatever. Oh, they're participating in this Lego challenge. And, you know, so he was able to, so that was one of the benefits of kind of a smaller group. And again, like I said, the benefit of a large group would be like, look at how many there are. A benefit of a smaller group is you can actually have more of these interactions. One of the other differences I noticed between National Youth Gathering is like National Youth Gathering, it had a bunch of stuff going on like the entire time. You could go to the floor, I forget what it's called, like the conference floor, and you could, if you didn't have a pastor or teachers like telling you to go to sessions, you could waste the entire National Youth Gathering experience just playing, you know, all the cool stuff to do on the presentation floor. Higher Things, on the other hand, did not have that thing constantly going on. The schedule was more along the lines of you go to all of these events throughout the day, and then at the end of the day, you've got some cool, more fun, relaxing events. So you work hard, you play hard. So for example, they had a petting zoo with a cow, adorable, a full-grown cow, sweetest thing. They had a petting zoo. They had, I think, laser tag. They had like all of these like really cool games and stuff like that. But they also had these competitions. Let me tell you, I was not ready for this. So they had like a Lego building competition. I'm like, yeah, I build Legos. So me and one of my youth, we sign up. I'm the only adult who signs up, by the way. What a dork. So I signed up for this. I'm like, yeah, I wanted to support my guy in my congregation. So I'm supporting him. You know, we've got to build a thing. I don't know. It's like a master Lego builder thing. I hadn't heard of this. So we're building this thing. I'm like, cool. We've got like a house type church thing. We built a church with a little guy inside. He's got an altar and he's got, you know, candles and everything like that. And he's praying. I thought it was pretty cool. All the bricks are different colors and everything. It looks like it was put together by, me. All the good stuff my youth did. I just kind of helped make it worse. When I turned around and I saw all these other kids were like putting together some things, and I was like, I forgot that Lego building was like a competitive sport, and these are like world-class athletes. And we got blown out of the water. There was some good stuff there. They had a talent show. They had chalk drawings, which I love drawing, obviously. But at the level they were doing, it was great stuff. So they had a lot of like really fun activities and stuff, but all of that was at the end. So the kids weren't kind of distracted, torn between, I want to have fun versus I want to go to class. Rather they got to enjoy the sessions. And then afterwards they got to enjoy these other activities. And there were so many things that you really couldn't do them all. I couldn't do the chalk drawings because I was doing the Lego stuff. I couldn't do the talent show because I was doing the laser tag. Like, there was just so much cool stuff to do. Keep coming back and keep getting more stuff. So that was those are some of the general impressions that I got there. It's not so higher thing. I wouldn't look at this as a higher things versus a national youth gathering thing. They offer kind of two different experiences and two different. So National Youth Gathering is more of like a social event, whereas Higher Things is more of an ecclesial event, more of a church event. So going to Higher Things, there was a lot of church stuff. We had church services. We had multiple ones. We had divine service. We had matins. We had compline. We had all these, you had chanting and all this other stuff. Whereas National Youth Gathering, you would have like kind of, like at the end of the day, they would have, they would get together and they would have like a big, like, event or something like that. But there wasn't a church service until the morning of the final day, which unfortunately a lot of the people left and they missed the best part of National Youth Gathering, which is a tragedy. It would be wonderful if National Youth Gathering was able to have the divine service like right in the middle so it could get everybody. Like, that would rock, but I'm not in charge of the organization. they wouldn't give me the keys to that tractor. Not that I would want to be in charge of anything. So it was, I mean, there are different experiences. I wouldn't go to one necessarily to the exclusion of the other. If there are different benefits to get out of both of them, but I would very, 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 very much, very much recommend checking out Higher Things. If you're not familiar with the content that they have online, if you can check them out in person, that would be ideal. But if not, at least check out the online stuff. Send emails to the people. Keep in mind that I may be maybe one of the more abrasive personalities out there, and they were nice to me. So if they were nice to a sinner like me, a chief of sinners though I be, they're going to be nice to you. Send them emails, that kind of stuff. Ask them questions. Anyways, that was kind of my general perception. My general thoughts on Higher Things in general, and I've got a list here. Like, it's a 13-page document that I'm not going to go through entirely, but I'm just going to skim over some of these things because I wrote notes for every single one of these sermons and every single one of these things that I went to, and I kind of want to give you a sneak peek at kind of what I experienced. So you hear me talk up this conference, and like, okay, well, you're a fanboy suck up or whatever. I've never been to Higher Things before. I've got nothing to do with the organization. I just liked it. All right. So first thing we did, let me see, what did I write here? I'm going to start going through this general stuff now. Again, if you get bored, I'm sorry. You didn't pay for this, so what do I care? The first thing, I need to stop being so rude. Maybe I should have gotten punched in the face. The first thing was like the divine service, the opening service. I wrote this, and I said, the service itself was divine service by the book, like LSB, which is to say perfect. There was chanting, hymnody, genuflection, but no incense. They had incense later in the week, so don't worry about that. The Eucharist was done well. I didn't have that many comments on the actual way the service was done because it was done the right way. So, like, how do you, like, what commentary is there? Like, good. A+. Like, I've got no complaints, right? Which, I'm sorry, is boring. You want me to rip things apart? They did a good job. I can't rip it apart there. All right. Let's see. We the first sermon was given by Reverend Sturzenbecker. I am getting better at pronouncing his name. I'm really bad with names. pronouncing them, let alone remembering them. So the fact that I can remember this guy and somewhat pronounce his name right, let's just say that left a big impact on me. But it wasn't to the face. he did a great sermon. All right. Let's keep going. He had a great sermon. I was able to talk to him afterwards. We had a plenary session. So the plenaries were these, like, everybody, a la-di-da-di, everybody would all get together in the same auditorium, and we'd have a presentation given by somebody. In this case, it was given by Reverend Brett Simic. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. And then I think he did some other sessions later on, and he may have done another plenary later on as well. But he gave a presentation on who I am, or who am I. This was the theme of the conference, was who am I? And oh man, hitting the nail right on the head with the concerns that youth are facing in particular, like this identity crisis. If you're not aware right now, if you're like confident in who you are and whatever, your youth aren't. They're being told from everyone in the world that they are this and that, and it's usually negative, or they are being told to assess themselves and come up with their own identity. It is a mess. We need Christian intervention in this. And there's a lot of biblical passages that talk about who we are and how we get our identity and stuff like that. All right, so he started out this presentation, this plenary, he started talking about these things, like he gave bad examples of how to come to the wrong conclusions, basically. So who are you? And then, like, how would you define yourself? Well, maybe you define yourself as young and youthful and vibrant and, you know, excited or whatever. Well, the fact of the matter is you're going to get older. So that identity changes. So if you find your identity in something within yourself that can potentially change, let's say you're a football player, but you get injured, you can no longer play football. Are you still a football player? So there's a lot of difficulty when you base your identity on your own interests, on your own skills, on your own attributes, these sorts of things that can change over time. That's a lot of difficulty. Another possible source of difficulty is when other people define you. So another person says, wow, I like this guy. He's always truthful or whatever. Well, maybe you're just like really good at lying. One of the problems with other people trying to come up with an identity for you is that they don't know you as well as you know yourself. Maybe you're good at misrepresenting yourself, whatever it is, like, it's not great for finding your identity. And again, it could be something that changes. Like, yeah, I know so-and-so. He's this short kid with short hair. No, he grows tall. Now he's like 6'5" and he's got long hair. I was like, oh, well, you know, that identity could change. And he asked this question. He says, what if somebody knew your name before your parents gave it to you? What if somebody was able to identify everything about you perfectly, and they knew it from all eternity, and they gave you a permanent identity? So it's external, done by somebody who's omniscient and omnipotent, and it's eternal, meaning it's been known for literally forever. That is a way to have a solid identity that doesn't change and perfectly describes who you are. Spoiler alert, it's God. God gives you this identity. You are a Christian. You are baptized. You are loved by Christ. You are forgiven. So all of these things that God gives to you that become eternal traits of who you are, that you can't lose, and you can't, don't get into the once saved, always saved argument. That's not what I'm talking about. But it's not like something like you can't be unbaptized. You can't unbaptize yourself. God knew you before you were even born. You can't change who you are to the point where God, like, was wrong, right? So finding your identity as a Christian, finding your identity as Christ, like, dude, this is core. This is great. Anyways, I'm going to keep skimming through this. A lot of great stuff. Like I told you, I got 13 pages of this stuff. If you really care to read it, it's all on Facebook. All right. So then there's a breakaway session I went to. So the breakaway sessions, these are little sessions where, like, you get a choice of, you can do on this day or whatever, at this time period, there are these small classroom type areas, and you can choose from like one of like, I don't know, eight or something like that at any given time. And you go in and you go to one of these classrooms. And the downside to this, unfortunately, is that I wasn't able to go to all of the sessions that I would like to have gone to. The upside is that these things are recorded and put online. But the ones that I went to were fantastic. There were more ones that I really wanted to see what they had to say. So one of the ones I went to was called Be a Man. This was by Reverend Chris Hull. If you've ever seen him, this dude's got a beard like this long. He's got a lavender, it's not purple, it's lavender. He's got a lavender coat he wears a lot of times. And he's got a Willy Wonka hat as well. Real charming guy. He had this great presentation, real entertaining to listen to as well. He gave this great presentation. He talked about examples of like manliness. He talked about, you know, like examples like Martin Luther and stuff like that. But then he talked about that, you know, the primary example of manliness is Christ. And what is it about Christ that makes him manly? And he got into some of these traits like sacrifice and stuff. He even talked about some other traits. If you're following this channel at all, you know that I'm doing a series called, and I haven't stopped the series. We're doing a series called like the Myth of Hypermasculinity. And I'm going into all of these traits that are all often defined as toxic or hypermasculine or whatever. And I'm saying that, no, these are actually good biblical traits. One of the traits he talks about in this is actually hatred, which is interesting. So I hadn't considered this, but yeah, hatred is a trait that God has. God hates wicked things. Well, if God has this trait, then it must not be a bad trait. Turns out that hatred is actually appropriate when exercised at bad things. Okay, cool. So this is something else that I can run with. So this wasn't just a course for these boys and how to be men, but this was also kind of an instruction for the girls to how to find somebody who's going to behave like a man. He says, don't marry a boy, marry a man, someone who will live according to the Bible, live sacrificially. This is a big point that he hammered home a lot, that one of the core traits of masculinity is sacrifice. Think about Christ, like sacrifice is kind of a big deal. With the whole cross thing, it's kind of a big deal. Anyways, I'm not gonna spoil his entire presentation. Again, if you can find it online, I would look it up. I think he called it, let me scroll up. He called it Be a Man. This is by Reverend Chris Hull, H-U-L-L. I would recommend you to check it out. All right, let's see, keep going. The next day we had a matins service. This was Pastor Goodman, Pastor Harrison Goodman. Dude, I love this one. So he starts this one off at this sermon. He starts us off with a question, something along, I paraphrase it, so I'm going to try to get it right as well as I can. He says, would a loving father, he's talking about the Garden of Eden, would a loving father allow his children to crawl on the floor if sharp knives were there? Like, dude, I've heard almost that exact question from some people online. I'm not just talking about like atheists, like, oh yeah, Christian, but like there's some Christians who ask these questions as well. Like, why did God put the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in the Bible? Why didn't God just like smote, you know, the devil or whatever? There are other questions, things that sounded familiar to me, like why did God put the tree in the garden? And why would God test people that he knew would fail? It's interesting. He got into some of the ideas behind these questions, he didn't just try to like make stuff up to answer the questions, like where the Bible is silent, he didn't speak, but he did suggest looking at the motivation behind the question. So if you're like curious, you're like, I'm curious, did Adam and Eve have belly buttons? Like maybe that's a curious question. But if you're asking, you know, why did God put the tree in the garden? I wouldn't have done that. If the motivation behind it is like, if I was God, I would have done a better job, then that's an actual sinful motivation behind this question. So the motivation behind the question is important. And he really gets into that. One of the other things, and again, I don't want to spoil this sermon because like, I can't really distill. I don't want to give you a full preview of the sermon because like, it won't do it justice. It's really just worth listening to. One of the things he talked about that I'm still chewing on to this day. I did a sermon before where I talked about the tree of the knowledge or the tree of life, and comparing that to the cross, because obviously the cross referred to as a tree sometimes in scripture. From the cross hangs, from the tree of life hangs the food which gives eternal life. Obviously Jesus, right? This is an allusion. This is a connection to Jesus, but he also connected the tree of the knowledge of good and evil to Jesus on the cross. And that was interesting because I hadn't really thought about it from that perspective before. This is why I like watching other people's sermons and stuff and researching other sermons. And I'm like, oh, cool. I didn't make that connection. Commentaries and stuff are helpful with this as well. But he talked about it kind of like a quarantine zone. Like this is the area where God puts all the stuff that he doesn't, that would hurt people. He puts it all here. Think about all the sin that gets put on Christ. He puts it in this location to protect them. And it's interesting that this is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. It's there, but it contains the stuff that they're not supposed to have anything to do with. Interesting. Fascinating. I'm still chewing on that. That's a really interesting perspective. Anyways, he demonstrated in this that he has actually interacted with youth before, so he knows what kind of questions that they would ask. It's almost like we got some qualified people running that organization over there. Not saying, just saying. Okay. Plenary number two, we had Michelle Bauman. Now, Michelle Bauman, if I remember correctly, Y for Life, I'm not sure if she's, what her position specifically is in Y for Life. It's a Lutheran Life organization and it is fantastic. They protect lives. And all of that entails without me getting, kicked off of YouTube by explaining it, but you know, wink, you know, I winked. So, but she gave this wonderful presentation. Let me see. And she was building on the plenary the first day. It's almost like they coordinated this. They built on each other's kind of plenaries and sermons and stuff like this. She talked about the name. She talked about names. This is interesting. The name Jesus means the Lord saves. It does. Yahweh, Yasha, Yeshua, Joshua, Jesus, Jesus, whatever. The name is the promise, as well as the name. It's the name for the Savior, and it's a promise that accompanies it as well. Let me see. She talks about, oh, this was really good. So she mentioned, she talked about Jacob and Esau. If you're familiar with the story of Jacob and Esau, Jacob the heel grabber is a guy who doesn't deserve, he's a younger brother who does not deserve the inheritance. And he's always like scheming and stuff like this. His brother Esau is this big hairy dude, goes off, goes hunting or whatever. And he actually sells his birthright to Jacob for like a bowl of stew, basically. Well, Jacob goes to collect this birthright from Isaac, who's blind at this point. Now, Jacob tricks Isaac by putting on his brother's clothes and covering himself with like goat hair or something like that. So his father thinks that he's Esau. So his father perceives Jacob, the undeserving son, as his brother, the one deserving of the blessing. And he blesses the undeserving one with the blessing intended to go to the son. Compare this to Jesus, and we put on Christ. And when Christ looks at us, when the Father looks at us, he sees Christ, and we receive the blessing of the firstborn son. That's a great connection. I like that. I think I use it later in a Bible study. All right, I'm going to keep going. Let me see. Sermons, Vespers, Day 2, Reverend Chad Hoover. Am I my brother's keeper? The short answer is yes, you are your brother's keeper. Let me see. He talked about Cain neglecting to love his brother and just focusing on himself. He felt envy for God, following after ego. He said, he talked a bit about sacrifices not being worth enough. So it wasn't that Abel's sacrifice was good enough on its own, but that Abel had a sacrifice with faith, and that was what made it good enough. Cain did not have faith. His sacrifice was not good enough. Let's see. We have been spared, and that will change how we see others. So if we, you know, if we see others, if we see ourselves as forgiven of sin, as chief of sinners being forgiven, then this will help us to take care of our brothers and to love others. All right. Keep going. I had breakaway session. Oh, this was funny. Reverend Brett Simek. We had a session called My Parents Are the Worst. Pastor Simek, S-I-M-E-K. He started the presentation with the fourth commandment, honoring authorities, honoring parents, things like that. God is the authority over man and puts man in his place. God established orders of creation. He recommended that the children show respect for their parents, and that parents should be patient with their kids, but kids should also be patient with their parents, because parents are doing a pretty hard job. It's actually pretty difficult to raise kids. And parents don't always get things right all the time. So children need to show grace and realize that they don't have perfect parents on earth. They have a perfect father who's in heaven, but they still need to honor their parents who are on the earth. He gave some hints for, I mean, cause there were a couple parents who attended this talk as well. He gave some hints for, child raising, things like trying to avoid the do this thing, not be, you know, because I said so. Sometimes it's true you should do something because you, like, if God tells you to do something, you should just do it. But sometimes, you know, sometimes God explains some things to us. He says, can you trust for a moment that your parents don't hate you? So this is interesting. If you went to this talk, you know, it's called My Parents Are the Worst. You went to this talk thinking your parents hate you. Like, he wanted you to give a little moment to really consider, like, maybe your parent is not trying to ruin your life. Maybe they're just struggling to be a parent. Oof. Oof. That's some good stuff right there. All right. I'm going to keep going. Keep going. Keep going. It was good stuff. Plenary Day 3, Pastor Brett Simek. Who am I, a Christian? So what? Like, how does it change your identity? So Pastor Simek was again giving a presentation, a plenary. Let's see. How does this change this identity, make a difference in our everyday life? We are not just individuals, but Christian individuals. How does this change how we go about vocation? He talked about spouses, male and female. He talked a lot about kind of Ephesians 5 and kind of the place in marriage that each person has, the husband and the wife. And he talked about the ordering that God places orders. The word subordination, ooh, we don't like that word, but it just means to put one in order under another. It doesn't mean necessarily that one is worthless and the other is, you know, awesome. But I mean, in the military, we understand this stuff all the time. Like, for example, if you've got a commander and you've got a sergeant major, like the sergeant major is technically subordinate to the commander, but the sergeant major gets things done. You don't disrespect the sergeant major. In fact, you listen to the sergeant major, and he usually has some very good advice for whatever lieutenant or captain or whatever is in charge of the unit. So the officer, the BC or the, you know, the CO or whatever, so he's in charge in terms of authority, in terms of order, but he listens to his sergeant major, and often the sergeant major will direct him to the right course of action. So is it possible for a man and a woman to have this role in marriage where the husband leads and the wife submits and the husband sacrifices, and they both love each other and they both work as an ordered pair of complementary units? Let's see. I say dating advice for boys, just be Jesus. So like anytime you're wondering what to do as a husband, just act out Jesus. How does Christ relate to the bride? He's a sacrifice. Jesus gave everything, sacrifices it all. Everything he does is for his bride. Wonderful thing. All right. Breakaway. I went to another breakaway session after this. This was by Reverend Daniel Voth. I'm sorry, I mispronounced it. Voth. V-O-T-H. Enduring the fiery trials of Satan. This was interesting. He begins talking about Genesis and the interaction with Satan in Genesis. And he talks about the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness and things like this. Satan is real. He's prowling for you like a lion. You were marked in baptism as God's child, and Satan hates that and hates you. He wants to destroy you. But God has called you to eternal glory. Jesus is restoring you to the Father, strengthening you by his power. You're being equipped to resist Satan and his attacks. Gets into like putting on the full armor of God, all this kinds of stuff. Kind of be aware of this thing. It's dangerous. Be aware of, you know, the demonic. It's dangerous. But at the same time, God is looking out for you and protecting you. So it was a great presentation. Here's another one. So another breakaway I went to called Hurt, Cutting Through the Platitudes and the Lies, or What I Wish I Knew to Tell Ashley. This is also by Pastor Harrison Goodman. He talked about a person that he interacted with and a lot of difficulty that he had with interacting with her, and that he resorted to platitudes because he didn't know how to help her in her difficult situation. I made a list of some of these. He said, these are some of these things. He said, it'll be okay. It will get better. It's not that bad. Focus on the positive. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Time heals all wounds, etc. Things like that. And platitudes, he says, platitudes do not work. They're not designed to work. They're designed to avoid a situation you don't know how to handle. Wow. That is poignant. That is right on the money. And rather than trying to make all these platitudes, use the Bible to talk about situations. Like if somebody is hurting because of a sin that they've committed, you can talk about the sin, but you can talk about the forgiveness as well. Like, you don't have to be like, well, you know, time heals all wounds. Like, no, chill, dude. Like, God has given you the right words to say. Anyways, I'm not going to get into it. This was a fantastic presentation that he gave. But again, I'm not going to get into the details about it. You should have been there. Let's see, plenary four, not enough. Every one of us has felt like we're not enough before. And we're not. We have God who makes us enough. Let's see. Okay, so, and then at that point, you know, you kind of get the picture from there. I'm not going to keep going. We're at almost an hour of me talking about these things. But anyways, so I could look at any of the things I told you. I have 13 pages of notes that I took of summaries of the different like sermons and plenaries and presentations and things like that. Like, there was so much stuff in every single one of them that I could have made an entire video based on every single topic and every single sermon that they went through and like broken them down and be like, this was an interesting thing. What about this thing? This was interesting as well. Oh, that was a good point. That was like, it was so, I mean, for me, like a geek who, none of you know this about me, but one of my favorite pastimes is when I'm doing stuff, I have to keep the kids alive, or I'll be doing, you know, I'll be drawing or playing video games or whatever nonsense I'm doing, lifting weights. And then I'll listen to, you know, Issues, et cetera, or I'll listen to podcasts or commentary or the Weimar Institute or all of these other things. And I love all of this constant pouring of theological information, theological concepts to consider, just being dumped directly into my brain. And then I can chew on it for the next few days. I do this for preparing for sermons and stuff like that. So for me, Higher Things was like an intravenous, like, theology directly into my veins. That'll be Higher Things, theology directly into my veins. So for me, this was great. This was a buffet of theology of like, well, I don't want to say buffet of theology, because then it's like, oh, you pick and choose. It was like, it was just a funnel of theology just being poured in. And that which the youth were able to pick up and kind of carry with them, and which resonated with them, and there was so much that did, they were still discussing. Somebody said that this was going to happen, And I was like, I don't know. My youth. So somebody said, like, on the way home from Higher Things, you're going to be chanting Compline and evening prayer and stuff in the car. And it happened. It happened. We did evening prayer in our car on the ride home. It was like a 15-hour ride. We were driving home, and I was like, not my youth. You know, they're, you know, they're teenagers or whatever. But, like, somehow I didn't expect it to happen, and it happened anyway. And we did it all the way through the doxology. It was great. It was fantastic. So what I recommend to those of you who have suffered through 49 minutes of this, would I recommend Higher Things? Absolutely. I would absolutely recommend Higher Things, unequivocally. Again, I'm not getting paid to say this. I don't even know that they like me at Higher Things. I'm kind of obnoxious, but I like them and I like what they put together. And I have dealt so much with youth online and with youth in person and stuff like that, that all of these things that they're covering, I'm like, yes, people are good. Theologically minded people are covering these things. This is so good. This is exactly what is needed right now. These are questions that real people are answering or asking. And they're getting real answers from people who really know the answers. There's so many dumb people out there with dumb answers. None of them in the LCMS, of course. Everybody in the LCMS is smart. But like, dumb people online are going to give really bad answers to your kids unless you have somebody give them a good answer. And if they are instructed well theologically, then these dumb answers are going to bounce right off them. You're like, well, but that's dumb. Like, of course, my identity is in Christ. Why are you trying to identify me as something else? Like, I don't need your identity. I don't need your labels. I have a label. It's, you know, it's a cross on my forehead that was placed there in baptism. I have, you know, I have worth. I have self-worth. Don't tell me that I don't have self-worth. Of course, I'm a redeemed child of God. Like, the more you instruct people, the more you instruct these youth, the more you just like reinforce this armor that's put on them. If you want to take care of your kids, they're going out in the world where there's all kinds of slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. And if you theologically armor them head to toe, that stuff bounces off. Keep bringing them back into church and polishing that armor and banging out the dents and everything like that. So this is fantastic. This is exactly what is needed. This is absolutely exactly what is needed. And as many people as possible, I would firmly recommend, highly recommend, 10 out of 10, both thumbs up, do it. Check out Higher Things. If you think for whatever reason I am like exaggerating the stuff that I'm talking about here, check it out for yourself. Check it out for yourself. I may be hyper and obnoxious, but I'm not wrong on this. I know for a fact what I saw. If what I saw didn't convey what I described, like, okay, check it out for yourself. If you don't believe me, check it out for yourself. That's the message of for today. Thank you all for listening to this. Oh, I don't know. Did any of you listen to this whole thing? Give me a thumbs up in the comments if you actually listen all at the hour of this. Thank you all for listening to this entire thing. God bless you all and take care.